State budget battles heat up.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. From APM, American Public Media in New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. BRB, be right back. That's what one state senator in Wisconsin put on her Facebook page after fleeing the state. She and other Democratic lawmakers are protesting a vote that would weaken public employee unions there. Republicans have been trying to vote on the proposal to fill a $3.5 billion state budget gap. In Florida, the battle doesn't have to do with unions. It has to do with high-speed rail. The state's Republican governor, Rick Scott, announced this week he was sending $2.4 billion in high-speed rail money back to the federal government. But now an influential group of lawmakers is trying to salvage the Tampa to Orlando rail line. From the Transportation Nation Public Radio Project at WNYC, Andrea Bernstein reports.
One of the people caught off guard was John Mica, the Republican chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee.
I was taken aback. I had about 15, 20 minutes to argue my points.
He wants to give the private sector a chance to complete the rail line.
No risk to the taxpayers, no additional cost to the state of Florida.
At least eight groups have expressed interest in paying the $300 million needed to complete the line, plus any cost overruns. Democratic Florida U.S. Senator Bill Nelson says responsibility for the project would be transferred from the state of Florida to another public agency.
We are looking at several. Amtrak is one.
But the money would come from an international construction firm. They want to get in on the beginning of what may be a much longer rail line that extends to Miami. The U.S. Department of Transportation says the Congress members have a week to put together a deal or the $2.4 billion goes elsewhere. New York and California are clamoring for the money. I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
Well, after announcing plans to merge, the New York Stock Exchange and the German market now have a much trickier problem coming up with a name for the joint trading floor. Our European correspondent Stephen Beard joins us now live from London with more on this story. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Jeremy.
So why has the name become such a big problem?
There are national sensitivities here. After all, a German company is taking over an iconic American institution. By rights, it should be a German name, but perhaps a non-threatening, unnationalistic, culturally acceptable German name. One jokey suggestion I've seen so far was Stocktoberfest. but economist Andrew Hilton thinks it should perhaps be a little more classical.
I would suggest that you simply choose as the holding company name the name of a good German. Find a good German. Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, Goethe, something like that. Write it in capital letters. Bach would be very nice because it would be very short, and call the exchange Bach.
Oh, yeah, Bach. That'll go over really well on Wall Street, Stephen.
Indeed. And the senior Democrat senator for New York has already said, Charles Schumer, has made it clear that New York has got to be in the name,
right,
and it's got to be first. This is obviously going to be a major headache for the two companies. So they've turned to social media like Facebook for help. They've thrown the search for a new name open to the social networks for brainstorming by their employees, much cheaper than using a brand consultant.
Well, let's see what ideas get written on their wall. Stephen Beard, our Marketplace Europe correspondent, thanks so much.
Okay, Jeremy.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are up across Asia right now, down in Europe. A judge has approved a request by the now bankrupt Borders bookstore chain to close 200 stores. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow jumped 29 points to close at 12,318.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at allybank.com. And by Reputation.com, protecting and improving your online reputation while deleting personal data from websites that sell it. Reputation Defender is now Reputation.com.
This year marks 150 years since the start of the Civil War. And as Ricky Bevington reports now from Georgia Public Broadcasting, some recession-scarred but history-filled communities are using the anniversary as a tourism opportunity.
In the small town of Milledgeville, the former state capital of Georgia, politicians debate whether to leave the United States.
Shall the people of Georgia secede from the Union in consequence of the election of Mr. Lincoln to the presidency of the United States?
This is one of many reenactments celebrating the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. In states from Maryland to Texas, museums, historical sites, not to mention hotels, restaurants, and gas stations, want to draw the business of heritage tourists.
It's a $192 billion business.
Tourism market researcher Laura Mandela says Americans who plan vacations to cultural and historic sites spend an average of $994 a trip. That's a third more than the average leisure vacationer.
I know souvenirs is the number two category of purchase. You know, shopping's number one.
Mandela says 80% of heritage tourists plan their trips online. So that's where communities with a historic past are working to get their attention. I've logged on to the website of the Georgia Historical Society, and I'm typing in the Civil War topic that I'm interested in, Sherman's March to the Sea. Up pops a map with driving directions, and it even has suggestions for hotels and restaurants.
We've made history sites into commercial sites for actually centuries now.
Yale University American History professor Dr. David Blight is an author of the upcoming Civil War website by the National Park Service. The federal government oversees 70 Civil War historic sites and battlefields, and they attract up to 12 million visitors a year. But so many tourists, Blight says, creates what he calls a dilemma between commemorating history and making money off of it.
No one can drive into Gettysburg without seeing 50 billboards on the way in.
And since maintaining historic sites isn't cheap, making the past part of a billion-dollar market may be the best way to preserve it. In Atlanta, I'm Ricky Bevington for Marketplace.
And finally to Missouri, which has gotten a lot of snow this year, and I'm sure there are a lot of people there who have taken a few days off work as a result, but not everyone. A FedEx driver had a delivery to make to a house on an unplowed road, but his truck couldn't make it. So he used his personal four-wheel drive vehicle to deliver a computer monitor. Which means, I guess, now the recipient has lost his excuse for not being able to work from home. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
We're all living such increasingly digital lives. What do you suppose happens when we just pull the plug?
I have not been using the internet for email, for Facebook, for sharing photos.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, getting by getting offline. Next time on Marketplace, the rest of the day's business news as well. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.